We're back, and if you're a polygraph operator and wish to defend your field, we know this is a very controversial show, so the lines are open. You know what to do. If you've got something else to say about polygraphs, if you believe they do work, please let us know and give us your reasons. We're going to be talking once again to George Mashke in just a few moments. Today's a happy day for me and Ann. It's the publication of our teen thriller, Melody Burning. So if there's a teenager in your life, go to your bookstore or go online and take a look at it. It's a lovely book. I think it's pretty going to be a lot of fun for young people. It's been a long time since I published a book for young people. My last book for young people was called Wolf of Shadows, and it was about a young boy and his mother who fell in and lived with a pack of wolves. It was a fictional story, not a true story, but it was a very popular book in its day some years ago, and I was been urged so many years to write another teen thriller. I did it, and based on Anne's idea, and it's Melody Burning. So do take a look at it. Also, if you live in the UK, my ebook Christmas Spirits is available from amazon.co.uk or anywhere ebooks are sold in the United Kingdom. Polygraphs are ubiquitous in our society. They are used in all kinds of different areas of government. One of the things I'm very eager to ask George, and I know he'll have the answer to this, is the 1988 Employee Polygraph Protection Act banned most use of lie detectors by private employers. I want to know from George just why that legislation came about and why it was passed. And if it was passed, does that mean that somebody in high places knows the polygraph doesn't work? And if that is true, then why is it being used by our government, especially in extremely sensitive areas? When we get back, we're going to go to the phones and we're going to also ask George these questions. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber sitting in for George Nuri tonight. We're talking about polygraphs with George Mashke. His website, antipolygraph.org. That's antipolygraph.org. His ebook is available free on his website on antipolygraph.org. Very interesting ebook. I've read most of it, and it's very well written and makes a strong case. But there's another case out there, too. And we have on the wildcard line Richard, a former FBI polygraph operator from West Virginia. Richard, welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you, Whitley. I appreciate you taking my call. Let me just say something. I'll tell you about my background. I came into the show a little late. I just heard the last few minutes because, quite frankly, it's very late here, and I set my alarm, and it didn't go off because I saw on your website on Coast to Coast, which I listen to every morning. I download it and listen to your programs. I heard about the polygraph, and I did check your guest website, and I said, I really have to give my two cents on this. I left the FBI in 1979 in order to become, number one, a private investigator, but I had a polygraph business, and it was a very successful polygraph business. I would say I probably have done, well over 1,000 tests in my time. I stopped doing them in the early 2000s for a number of reasons. One, I was becoming retired. And number two, I didn't have the desire to continue doing it because I was a little burned out after you do so many tests. Now, let me say, first of all, with your last question is what you're going to ask the guest about the Polygraph Protection Act, Employee Polygraph Protection Act. I was rather active in our association to try to kill this or modify it. Organized labor for the few years before the act was pushed through made it a priority, said, we have to knock this out. They did not like pre-employment polygraphs. And it actually came down to money. Who has the money? Pat Schroeder in the House, Orrin Hatch in the Senate, backed it, was given extraordinary extremely a large amount of money. The associations nationwide could not afford to beat it, and it was passed. What essentially it did is it outlawed it on the employment scene, polygraph, but expanded it for government usage. And what we would ask in the Polygraph Association, if it doesn't work, why are you expanding it? And it comes down to money. That's how that got passed. With the stroke of a pen, it really killed my polygraph business as far as doing pre-employment and specific issues, polygraph tests on the private sector. We continued to do what was known as attorney test, and people that would come in off the street wanted to know issues within a household. So we essentially, our business went down about 85%. I have done so many specific issue polygraph tests, and I wish I could spend the time, you had the time, that I could give you specifics as to results of taking these tests. One of the best things about it is a lot of people say, well, you know, you really can screw somebody over with this, and I agree, and it's a very serious thing. But what I can also say, there was a lot of people that were accused of things that were clearly non-deceptive in their test, and they could walk out of there saying, look, I took the polygraph test, and I passed it. So-and-so took the polygraph test. It was usually a one-on-one or one out of three people, like a cash till in a bank, money missing. And they, rather than firing all three of the people, which they probably do now because there's money missing, they would take the polygraph test, and I would say, look, this person was deceptive. I can add right now a little something else.
But what George is saying, though, is that you might have been wrong.
I can say if I didn't believe that I was correct, and I've had so many people come back to me later and say, you know, I lied about this, and you said I was wrong. You said I was lying. I used to tell people when they came in to take the test, there's only one person that knows what the story is. At the end of this test, I will know what the story is. Yes, I could have been wrong. But then again, any expert in court can be wrong, too. I'm not saying I wasn't wrong, but I'm saying if I didn't know, I would simply say inconclusive and come back and take it another time or don't come back and take it, whatever the circumstance. So you could either be deceptive, non-deceptive, or inconclusive. At least 10% of mine were inconclusive. Now, I can say this. One of the things they've got now, they've got computer enhanced, which I didn't have. I still have my old instrument here at the residence that I don't use it. It's just I keep it. But with this computer enhanced and advanced technology has come out, Department of Defense has been very good at doing research projects, especially the folks over at the National Security Agency who's been the leader in it, that I think that the probability of inaccuracy has greatly diminished.
George, do you know anything about these new developments in polygraph technology?
Yes, I do. And Richard is right. Most polygraph instruments that are sold nowadays are computerized. But, you know, it's the computerization doesn't actually result in a more accurate procedure because the indices that are being measured by the polygraph, your palmar sweating, your breathing, and heart rate, blood pressure, these functions are not in any systematic way correlated with deception in humans. So it's a problem of, you know, garbage in, garbage out, being able to very accurately measure and quantify that which should not be measured in the first place doesn't result in a more accurate test.
In the December 3rd New York...
It helps to bewilder and bamboozle the public.
We have, folks, incidentally, a slight time delay between us and George. He's in Norway. And so if it sounds...
The Netherlands.
In the Netherlands, sometimes like we're talking over each other, it's because we are. We are trying not to, however, and I regret any appearance of having stepped on each other. We're certainly not trying to do that. George, in the December the 3rd New York Times... There's an article by Ann Eisenberg called Software That Listens for Lies. She says, Julia Hirschberg, a professor of computer science at Columbia University, may spell trouble for a lot of liars. That's because Dr. Hirschberg is teaching computers how to spot deception, programming them to parse people's speech for patterns that gauge whether or not they're being honest. For this sort of lie detection, there's no need to strap anyone into a machine. And do you know anything about this research?
No, I don't. I saw that headline, but I haven't read the article. I would just say in general, though, you'll see all sorts of lie detection technologies coming out, voice stress analysis, analysis of people's irises of their eyes and eye movement and pupil dilation, or devices that are being proposed for screening people at airports that will measure how much they're perspiring or if they have some sort of odor or...
Oh, I read about that, that people with funny odors could be stopped at the airport.
But the thing is, in all of these cases, what I find is that the marketing is way ahead of the scientific research. And typically, instead of publishing findings in scientific peer-reviewed journals, they go to the press or to market such things to the Department of Homeland Security or the Pentagon to people who don't have the scientific credentials to make an accurate assessment of these technologies. So as for detecting lies by a computerized analysis of a person's written words, I'd be very skeptical of that. It's certainly conceivable that there might be some intuitions to be made, but as a reliable technique for detecting deception, I'd just be very skeptical of that.
I've heard that word choice is a way to detect lies. I think that's what you may be talking about, that people who tend to use longer words, polysyllabic words, two or three syllables, are more likely to be lying. Is that what you're talking about?
No, not specifically. Again, I'm not sure if that was the point in the New York Times article, which, again, I haven't read. But
it's mentioned in the article. It's part of it.
Okay. Because if someone uses polysyllabic words, it might also be an indication of a higher level of education.
Well, that's true.
That's what I thought when I saw this.
So again, it seems to me like a simplistic assumption to make, but there may be more to it than that. I really wouldn't want to speculate further.
We got a lot of calls for you, George, so let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Jonathan on the wildcard line in Rochester, New York. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm very fine, thanks. What's your question?
Well, I've got a story about how a friend beat the lie detector test. I worked at a gas station over the summers when I was in college, and I worked with a friend of mine who just about everybody who worked there knew was not being honest with the money, I guess is one way of putting it. And they brought in a person to lie detector the staff, and we figured that, you know, three questions in, this guy'd be walking out, you know, fired. Well, the lie detector guy comes out, looks at the manager, and says, "That is the most honest person I have ever lie detected." And, like, all of our jaws dropped. And it turned out that what my friend did is he would cop to the lowest offense that he could. For instance, if they said, "Have you stolen from the company?" he would say, "Well, yeah, there are days I forget my wallet, and I'll take a soda because it gets hot outside." And that got past the polygrapher as him being honest. Because when they'd ask then, "Have you ever stolen from the company?" they never asked, "How much have you stolen?" Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yeah, George, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, well, I think the caller or the person who related the story to him of how he passed the polygraph is not really aware of polygraph methodology, and he was probably lucky to pass
really?
Rather than doing it out of skill. Yeah.
Well, this actually happened.
Pass the polygraph is to show a stronger reaction to the control questions than to the relevant questions. And there are techniques for doing that. The question about whether you've ever stolen anything from work, that's a common control question, because it's assumed that everyone has pilfered something, whether it's, you know, pens or paper or maybe a soda from the machine. And that's a common control question. A relevant question would be, did you, you know, take the cash from the register? So in that situation, the key to passing would be to show a stronger reaction to the question about taking anything than to the question about taking the thing that is actually missing.
Now, this happened last summer, according to the caller, but as I understand it, the Employee Polygraph Protection Act banned use of lie detectors by private employers, but perhaps not in a case like this, or?
Right. There's an exemption for specific incidents where something is known to have gone missing or crime is known to have occurred, and there are specific people who could have possibly committed the crime. In such cases, the employer may be able to ask, but not require, employees to submit to a lie detector test. And if they refuse, the employer cannot legally retaliate against them in any way. Otherwise, they may be liable for considerable damages. So in this situation where something was missing, it may have well fallen within an exemption of the Employee Polygraph Protection Act.
Now, why we've heard one story about why the act was passed. Could you give us your opinion about why the Employee Polygraph Protection Act was passed?
Yeah, well, there's a good reason that labor unions were against the polygraph. It's because so many employees and applicants for employment were being falsely accused by polygraph operators and actually being asked outrageous questions in some circumstances, like about their sex lives, things that were no employer's business. So it caused a lot of outrage. You know, by the heyday of the polygraph in America was really the 70s and 80s, at least in the private sector, where, you know, if you wanted to work at a Radio Shack or a convenience store, there was a very good chance that you would have to take a polygraph test. So lots of people had either the experience of being falsely accused of deception or being asked absolutely outrageous questions on the polygraph. Sometimes the polygraph operators used these sexual questions as control questions, something that was just intended to elicit an emotional response, but it still came off as being very inappropriate.
The irony there is that I imagine by sex questions you mean the gay straight question, and I wonder if Hoover could have passed that himself.
How many partners you've had and what's your favorite position, all sorts of outrageous questions would be asked by polygraphers who, you know, had the power of gods over perspective.
Yeah, well, Hoover was big on polygraphs, but I don't know if he could pass
that one. No, he did not like
one.
Polygraphs.
Oh, he didn't?
No.
Oh.
We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. We got a lot of callers waiting. We'll get back to your calls as soon as we come back. This is Whitley Strieber sitting in from George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I'm thinking to myself, what advice would I give to somebody if I was told that their spouse had asked them, or lover, to take a polygraph test? I'm going to ask George that question in just a couple of minutes, because I'd be very interested. My spouse, I hasten to add, has never asked me to take a polygraph test.
Don't need to.
Good.
Most wives don't, and we wives know that.
Right. Yeah, the wife always knows
absolutely
what's going on. You know, you are an actual...
You look in his pockets. You smell the perfume, you know.
But you've never had that problem.
No, I haven't. You almost had an affair. You didn't want to have the affair, and you kept calling me the whole time you were in this woman's house. And I finally said, go ahead and have an affair if you want to, but don't keep calling me about it.
Well, let's be fair about this. I was tricked into going to this person's house, and I was very desperate to get out of there because I realized that she was after me. It was pretty scary for me because I've been happily married for a long time. This happened many, many years ago, and I did not want to interrupt my marriage. And so, yes, I did keep calling because I was trying to get you to say something that would enable me to have an excuse to leave an engagement that I had promised to make with this person without realizing what it was all about. But let's neither here nor there. We're not going to go down that road any farther. We've been there. We've done that. I survived. I was innocent, and I could pass any kind of a lie detector test, including the wife's careful, careful eye. When we get back, we're going to ask George about husbands, wives, and polygraphs. We'll be right back. This is Whitley Strieber sitting in for George Nuri, and Strieber is with me. We're talking to George Mashke. George's website, antipolygraph.org. That's antipolygraph.org. You can get his free ebook on antipolygraph.org and learn his reasons for believing that polygraphs do not work. We got a lot of calls for you, George. So let's go right back to the lines west of the Rockies. Jess from Orange County, California. Jess, thanks for hanging in there. What's your question for George?
Yes, I took legal psychology in college, and I was wondering, what's your opinion of the guilty knowledge test versus the controlled questions test?
Okay, George.
The guilty knowledge test, yeah, this is something we haven't discussed. This is a technique using the polygraph that was devised by the polygraph critic I mentioned early on, David Slicken, author of A Tremor in the Blood, a big polygraph critic. But he devised a test that would be an alternative to the polygraph techniques that are in common use. That alternative is the guilty knowledge test. And it has a sounder theoretical basis than common polygraph techniques. And that works basically this way. Suppose a crime has taken place, and there are facts that only the perpetrator of the crime and the police would know. Then a test could be devised whereby someone's hooked up to the polygraph, and asked questions like this. If you committed the murder, then you know what the murder weapon was. Was it a knife? Was it a lead pipe? Was it a fire poker? Or was it a shotgun? And it would be expected that the person might show a reaction when the actual murder weapon is mentioned if they know what the murder weapon was by having been there when the crime took place. So that test is much sounder, and there's a reasonable basis to believe it would work, but it's not widely used by polygraph operators, and instead they prefer the control question test, which is the one I explained to you earlier in the show.
So, but it does work better, is what you're saying.
In theory, it should, yes. I mean, it still would be subject possibly to countermeasures, possibly a faulty memory of the person being questioned. But if a person consistently showed a strong reaction to all of the key questions, then it would probably be reasonable to infer that they had knowledge of the facts of the crime.
Okay, let's go to Victor in Vista, California on the wildcard line. Victor.
Hi, I have a question about whether any scientific experiment has been done to test the replicability of the conclusions of the operators. Where you take a whole bunch of operators, put them in a controlled double-blind experiment, and do they all get the same result, or do they get different results, or has anything been published in the literature, the psychological literature, about that? And I'll hang up and listen to your answer. Thank you.
That's a good question I have to ask. I have to say, George, what's your answer?
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, no. That is a test, retest reliability. Whether people tested by one polygrapher, whether another will get the same results. That's the sort of thing that the polygraph operators actually aren't very curious about investigating.
Well, you know, that astonishes me.
Serious scientists really aren't interested in polygraphy either, so not a lot of research is being done into that. But even, you know, just the basic science of proving it to work reliably at better than chance levels under field conditions with people who are really suspected of something with real consequences on the line, it hasn't been proven to reliably work better than chance or better than an interrogator without a polygraph might do.
But now, we've had this technology available since the 20s, and it astonishes me that this has not been done. The caller asks an excellent question, because if it works, then a group of 20 polygraphers should all come to the same conclusions about a given individual's responses. And that test has never been done, is what you're saying.
Right. Well, I may have been unclear on what the caller intended, whether he meant different examiners doing independent examinations of the same subject, will they reach the same results? Or if they score the same set of polygraph charts, will they get the same results? I believe some studies have been published, perhaps not in peer-reviewed journals, but in polygraph trade journals, about how the extent to which polygraphers can agree just on the scoring of the same chart. And there's a fair degree of consistency in scoring them the same way. But there's still room for differences of opinion, and these are sometimes argued in court cases, typically. So generally, polygraph evidence is not admissible in court, but in some cases it has been, and there have been disputes over the interpretation of polygraph charts.
Under what circumstances would a polygraph be admissible in court?
Well, here's a scary one. If it's stipulated, sometimes prosecutors will offer a suspect a fool's bargain, sit for a polygraph test, and if you pass, we'll consider dropping the charges. But you have to sign an agreement in advance that whatever the results are, they'll be admissible in court as evidence. So,
oh boy, that's a scary bargain.
If you end up failing the polygraph, that can be then admitted as evidence in the court of law. One state that's notorious for this is the state of Ohio, where prosecutors have made such deals. And so there's a famous case of a man who was falsely convicted of murder because of this. Later, and exonerated. Fortunately, he didn't get the death penalty.
I imagine he was exonerated with the real lie detector, which is DNA evidence.
Well, the case I'm thinking of was that of Floyd Fay, and I believe it was just regular investigation. I think it was before the advent of DNA evidence that he was exonerated, but in recent years, there have been a number of cases of people who failed the polygraph and from whom false confessions were extracted by the police, who were later exonerated by DNA evidence, among other things. One of the more, I don't know if it goes famous, celebrated or publicized cases is that of Jeffrey Deskovich, who was a high school student who became a suspect in the murder of a classmate of his. And after he failed the polygraph, the police interrogated him at length and finally got him to confess. He spent 16 years in prison for a murder he didn't commit. Ultimately, DNA evidence exonerated him.
but he spent, you know, his formative years when he should have been going to college and starting a career in jail.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to the first-time caller line, Bruce in Washington, D.C. Hi, Bruce.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question to ask, but before I do that, I'd like to preface it with a comment about advice. And my dad, back in the late 50s, was a junior officer assigned to the embassy in London as an air attaché. And he used to oversee the administration of polygraph tests. And the one bit of advice that he took quite seriously when he gave to me and my older brother before we became Air Force officers ourselves was to never take a polygraph test. He thought they were junk science and that the polygraph administrator already had a built-in bias when he was called in to give the test that you were guilty of something, and he was determined to find something about you. And anyway, but the question I asked, called in to ask about was the fact that here in Washington, D.C., all the city courts are actually federal judges, and I've learned that none of the federal district courts will accept a polygraph test as evidence, and that about every 10 years they look at the evidence on polygraphs and decide they're also junk science. Would you care to comment on that?
George, do you have a comment?
Yeah, sure. Yes. In general, the federal courts are very leery of polygraphs. However, under a new rule of evidence, the Daubert standard, federal judges can consider for themselves whether to admit or not to admit polygraph evidence. They very rarely do, but it's a possibility that they could if a judge could be persuaded to admit it. But, yeah, so fortunately, federal courts are skeptical of polygraphs. However, polygraph results may be taken into consideration for such things as purposes of sentencing, how long a sentence that someone who has been convicted get in that situation, whether they've passed or not passed a polygraph, might be influential. And in some cases, especially the people on probation for especially sex offenses may be required to take periodic polygraph tests to determine whether they have been complying with the conditions of their probation. And that's a scary thing because it's such an unreliable technique. As we explain on antipolygraph.org how to pass it, anyone, you know, with a bit of curiosity and access to the internet can easily discover how to fool the polygraph. It's scary that in such context, polygraphy is being relied upon.
And extensively. George, a little earlier, my wife and I talked about a time when a fan had tricked me into coming into her house in an effort to make it seem as if we were lovers. It's conceivable that had I not started calling my wife frantically to try to explain what was going on, she might have asked me to take a polygraph. What advice would you give to anyone who has been asked by a spouse or lover to take a polygraph?
Right. My advice would be not to take it and to explain to your spouse or lover why polygraphs are unreliable. And we have extensive documentation of that on antipolygraph.org. If you show them our book, The Lie Behind the Lie Detector, which, as you mentioned, is free to be downloaded. We go in the first chapter, thoroughly debunk any supposed scientific basis for polygraphy. But we also explain at length how to fool the polygraph if you're a liar. So, you know, a spouse who is cheating and wants to fool the polygraph easily could, but it's really the truthful spouse who ought to be very leery of agreeing to a polygraph test, because so often they come to the wrong conclusion and the innocent person ends up being falsely accused of deception. And we hear from people all the time who are in exactly that situation and
what can I do? How can I convince my spouse that the polygraph was wrong? And that's a position that you don't want to get into in the first place. So I'd say refuse a polygraph and explain to your spouse or lover, boyfriend or girlfriend, just how unreliable the test is, and not just, you know, base your relationship or to make decisions about such an important life matter based on such an unreliable technology.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to the wild card line. Dave in Minnesota. Dave, thank you. You've been waiting for a little while.
Hello.
Hello.
I just wanted to give personal testimony on the situation and wondered what your opinion of the situation would be on the situation I had where I was in a accused of a serious crime, federal crime, sorry, felony. State's attorney saw a lot of holes in the case after 4 months into county jail. Went to my attorney and said, we're going to take a polygraph test, and I took him past it, and I had to sign that document. But knowing that I was going to, you know, if I would have failed, it would have been permissible in court. I just kind of I signed the document, didn't read it, just to not add stress to the situation, because 2 months prior, my attorney and I paid for a gentleman giving a polygraph test. We're using an older machine, a non-computerized one. And that one I didn't fail or pass. It was an undeterminable middle ground. And so what I got from that was pressure of the situation kind of just kept rising as I was taking that first test. And I believe that's why I didn't pass it. But because my answers were a certain way, they just decided, well, it's inconsistent, so we don't know. When I took the second one, that was computer, it was, I just concentrated on being calm, breathing evenly, and answering the answers honestly. And they almost asked the same exact questions. And those control questions, you don't know what they're going to ask you with the control questions. Yeah, they're obviously going to answer the obvious questions with the case, but those control front ones, you don't know. And that was my situation. And I just was wondering, based on what your experience is in giving polygraph tests, though yours seems like it's not on the criminal side, what was your opinion on based on that experience I had would be?
Okay, George? We're coming up on the top of the hour, George, so why don't we hold this over until we get back? We're going to be back on Coast to Coast AM talking to George Mashke and taking your calls about the polygraph. Is it reliable? Should it be discontinued as a major tool of the security forces? We'll be back after the top of the hour.